From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Halloween is less than a week away, so if you'll indulge us, we'd like to examine some seasonally appropriate topics. Later, a trip into the world of spirits, but right now, the dead. University of Tennessee grad student Katie Corcoran and a team are studying how to better identify mass graves. WUOT's Chrissy Kuiper spoke with Corcoran and Devin White, a senior research scientist at Oak Ridge National Lab, about their experiment.
What we're basically doing is pointing every sensor that we've got at the four of these graves in the surrounding area there that's also undisturbed. And we're getting a sense of how they're changing throughout time, how they're different in terms of size, vegetation stressors, and then the topographic differences we might miss because the vegetation is there. In many cases, you don't really know where to start, and so some of this imagery helps you look at large areas, and you can narrow down using, again, these signatures that we're learning about through this experiment. You can narrow down potential or highly probable areas for graves.
And one of the most significant advancements in recent years is actually the use of an active scanning technology called LIDAR that allows us to actually penetrate through treetops. So even in like heavily forested areas, jungles, you know, you can think about, you know, mid-latitudes where there's potentially a lot of conflict these days, and satellites can only see the light that's reflected off the top of the trees. And so anything going on underneath that tree canopy is very difficult for us to see remotely. Whereas with some of these new technologies like LIDAR, we can actually get under that canopy and see what's going on the ground and do it in three dimensions.
Devin, can you explain how the LIDAR works?
Sure. I often joke that, you know, you can imagine taking a laser pointer and strapping it to your iPhone. And it's more or less sort of the dumbed down version of the way this technology works, where you have an instrument shining a laser beam at the ground. And the computers attached to this laser beam also have a very precise understanding of where the origin for this laser beam is in space, but also in terms of how it's oriented to the ground. So that laser beam sends out a pulse, essentially. And that pulse of light hits the ground and reflects back. So in some respects, it's a bit like radar, or, you know, the way that bats navigate by echolocation. It's what we call an active remote sensing technology. So the way that this works is that the light is shot at the ground, essentially. It bounces off something and it comes back. And what the sensor records is the amount of time that it takes for that to happen. And every single pulse of light actually has the ability to reflect off multiple things, or it has the potential to do so. So if you think about shining a laser beam at the top of a tree, there's the opportunity for it to potentially bounce off multiple parts of that tree, maybe hit the ground and then come back up. And okay. The more recordings you get like that, you know, the more points that you build up, you end up with this gigantic point cloud, as we call it. And it ends up looking extremely realistic.
We recently worked with Ralph Dinwiddie, who is a scientist at ORNL. He is a spectral scientist, and he's looking at the thermal signatures of these graves on a 24-hour cycle. So we want to see, do the graves have a different temperature at different times of day than their surroundings? And you know, we're seeing just right away visually that yes, they do. So that's a pretty neat early result, and so we're gonna kind of go on that and look further into that that technology. So it's exciting. We're already seeing differences.
Earlier in this edition of The Method, I promised spirits, but of course I didn't say what kind. We're talking moonshine. The beverage has been popping up in liquor stores all over the place lately, and it's fueling a new kind of tourism here in East Tennessee. Gatlinburg has two distilleries, and a third competitor is on the way. As the drink's popularity grows, WUOT's Christine Jessel takes a look at the science behind moonshine.
Steve Bosch is a master distiller at Davy Crockett's Tennessee Whiskey in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. University of Tennessee Professor Emeritus Dr. Jamie Adcock has spent a lifetime studying chemistry. Together, they'll walk us through the process of making moonshine.
Kind of noisy in the background with the still going. Over here we have our 400-gallon cooker. That's where we cook the corn mash. We have to heat it up to 200 degrees. It releases all the starch out of the corn so we can convert it to sugar and the yeast can eat it and make alcohol.
The yeast begins to eat, in a sense, the carbohydrate or the sugar and convert it into energy. To get the energy it needs, it will generate heat and it will produce carbon dioxide and ethanol.
Ethanol is the product you want. That's the drinkable product. There's several different types of alcohol that are made during the fermentation process. Methanol, butanol, hexanol, propanol. The only good one you want is ethanol. I'm sure everybody's heard stories of people going blind from drinking moonshine, and that was the methanol.
And methanol can cause liver damage, can damage your retina, make you go blind, kill you. So unless a distiller, a moonshiner, is very careful, you can get a very bad product.
So of course, when you first start the still, the strip and run, which is what we're doing right now, when you first start your strip and run, your methanol and your bad alcohols are going to be the first ones to come off the still. So you want to take the first, depending on your size, couple gallons maybe, and just discard it because it's not any good.
Moonshiners didn't have the blending. They didn't put it into charcoal barrels. They didn't age it to get a blend that had the flavor that makes it Jim Beam or Jack Daniel's. And they just basically produced a clear, colorless liquid and sold that.
It's the same basic process that's been used for hundreds of years, but everybody has their own little quirks, their little processes they go through. And the small things make a big difference in the taste. How fast you distill it, how fast you cool the vapor down. Anytime you distill, it evaporates the alcohol, but it also carries across a certain amount of water and a certain amount of impurities.
You can't get pure ethanol by simple distillation. It comes out as a mixture with water.
That was one of the questions. I said, okay, well, it's an ethanol alcohol. And everybody's like, well, can you drive with it? And the answer, in short, is no.
Not directly. If you put hooch in your gas tank, you will have a problem.
Okay, so no Thunder Road with moonshine in the back.
A bottle of whiskey is not going to do you.
That was Davy Crockett's Tennessee Whiskey Master Distiller Steve Bosch and UT Chemistry Professor Emeritus Dr. Jamie Adcock. For The Method, I'm Christine Jessel, WUOT News.
He said 200 agents were covering the state. Whichever road he tried to take, they'd get him sure as fate.
And on that note, that's The Method from WUOT News. A reminder, you can listen to this or any previous edition of The Method at WUOT.org. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.